What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Doug hates candy wrappers, screaming baby sticky seeds with 50 as in popcorn kernels in his teeth. There's still not one that he won't see, 'cause Doug loves movies.
Hey everybody, my name is Doug and I love movies. This is Doug Loves Movies. As the title of this not-so-mini-mini-ep suggests, on Wednesday, June 19th, Two Oceans 13, I got to go to the Landmark Theater in Los Angeles and conduct a Q&A with the director, cast, and cinematographer of a little gem that I've already told you about called The Kings of Summer. It's playing now in places I'm going to be soon, like Scottsdale, Arizona, San Diego, San Francisco, New Orleans, Minneapolis, Austin, Milwaukee, and more. And more cities will be added on Friday, and even more cities on July 5th. So go to thekingsofsummermovie.com to see if it's playing near you, and if possible, see the movie before listening to this. There are no major spoilers, but there's lots of little ones. Enjoy!
Hey, everybody! That was Kings of Summer, as you know, and a lot of the people involved in making this movie are here tonight. I'm Doug Benson. For anybody who doesn't know me, I have a podcast called Doug Loves Movies, and I was fortunate enough to see the movie a few weeks ago and have on two of the guys that are here tonight, and we'll bring them out. But first, let's bring out the director of the movie, Jordan Vogt Roberts, is here.
Hey, thank you guys for coming out. Like I said, you guys are supporting independent cinema, and that's a big deal. If you like this movie, please help us spread the word about it. Because with movies this size, one or two people actually makes a big difference.
And what's the where are we at for the listeners of the podcast? You obviously don't need to tell these people where they can see it, but is it it's still expanding into more cities pretty much each week?
Or? We're expanding. Last week we got our ass kicked by a little movie that no one's ever heard of called Man of Steel. So I think that's screwing up our expansion right now. But yeah, we're in like 60 cities right now. You can go to our website and it'll tell you where it's playing.
KingsofSummer.com?
TheKingsOfSummerMovie.com.
I love how they always have to stick movie on there.
At the end, yeah.
Because some jerk went and grabbed The Kings of Summer as soon as he heard that was a movie.
Actually, the best part about it is people were so nervous about this movie and the fact that there are like kids swearing and kids drinking. And The Kings of Summer is a legitimate Corona ad campaign right now. So I think if you go to thekingsofsummer.com, it's like a Corona party.
That's funny, because I think Bellagio is the most interesting man in the world.
There's
a thing at the end?
There's a tag.
There's a scene at the end, and we're missing it?
There's a Marvel-esque tag at the end of the movie. We're setting up the Avengers of Kings of Summer.
It's just more, it's extra footage of Bellagio. Biagio.
Do you want me to bring these guys up?
Yeah, let's bring everybody up here.
All right, so we have our wonderful cast here. First, I want to bring out Gabe Basso, who plays Patrick. Next.
Hey, dude. Nice to meet you.
The very wonderful Joe Toy, a.k.a. Nick Robinson. And then the very odd creature.
Good to see you again. I've been good.
They're
have a seat,
up.
Grab a microphone. He's just chatting with me over here.
He's high. The very odd creature. Biagio. Moises Arias.
Moises actually, he won the movie game we play on the show when he was on. He was...
My favorite question I get all the time is like, so Biagio, the kid who plays him, is a weirdo, right? And it's like, yeah, but in a totally different way.
Yeah.
He's a thug. And then next, Mark Evan Jackson, who plays Mr. Keenan. Woo!
Hey, dude. Nice to see you.
And primarily nice because job. I like embarrassing him, a very dear friend of mine and a huge part of this movie, Ross Rigge, the DP. So we kind of have a ragtag
hey, Ross.
People here.
Nice to see you. Let me just jot that down. Late edition, Ross Rigge. How do you spell it?
R-I-E-G-E. It's like Rigge.
It's like Rigge or... Yeah. Rigi?
Yeah, I realize I've been pronouncing your last name wrong forever. I'm so sorry. Like, I've been saying Rigge.
That's right. I'm a man of many names.
It's tough for some 17-year-olds to bum us out, so it's okay.
Where did you, Jordan, where did you find Ross, or how did that collaboration get going?
We met like 6-7 years ago now at this point. I used to shoot all my own stuff, and I'm super hands-on and kind of an asshole because of it. And I didn't want to shoot my own stuff anymore. And he was at the same agency as me, and I went to them, and I was shooting this short film called Successful Alcoholics, and I wanted someone to do it. And I got a bunch of like great commercial reels. These guys, they look fucking incredible. And I was like, why would they want to do this? And they're like, well, these guys make a bunch of money. They want to do something cool. And there's this one reel in the pile that was definitely like a little more rough around the edges and raw, but it was like way more exciting and definitely felt hip. And we've just been working together ever since. And he's kind of like what saved me in this whole process of.
So he shot Successful Alcoholics.
Yeah,
nice. That's a terrific film as well. It's short. It's like 25
minutes
long. And
it's
stars
a medium.
Stars one of the biggest banes of my existence, T.J. Miller.
Mine too.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
He's a nut. Like he's like he's kind of Biagio like, but he's a real person.
Yeah, I mean, I feel
it's
like
not
I
a
need
tremendous
to be very,
performance
I need to be very
by a talented young
what
actor
I say in a public environment, but to describe him as the bane, as long as we can just both agree to describe him as the banes of our existence, that's great.
Yeah, he's he's troublesome. he's a troublemaker, but hilarious
me.
Dude.
He talked shit about me by name in GQ magazine. That's shit. That's true. First time I was ever in GQ magazine. Well, my parents pick up a GQ magazine to read, and it's this guy talking shit about me for no reason unrelated to what they're talking about. It's great. Really good.
I would like to really dig into this, but there's such a big panel here that they maybe haven't even met T.J. Miller.
Oh, man, what a douche.
I know.
Yeah, he just comes on my show and is one of the top 3 or 4 most obnoxious guests, and I have to have him back because the listeners love it. They love how frustrated I get with him.
Beautiful.
But let me ask you guys specific questions about the movie, starting with Nick Robinson. Monopoly. It's a big plot point in the movie that you play Monopoly a few times in the story. Had you ever played prior to playing this role?
I had, actually.
Oh, okay.
I didn't actually play it anymore in like preparation or anything, but it was certainly a very cool, cool time. I had a good time. No, Monopoly
was so
great.
High. You're so high.
What?
Right
now. No, I'm not. You're high. But that scene was one of the first ones I'd shot with Nick Offerman, and it was just he's a machine. He's hilarious.
Yeah, he's a very funny dude, and a lot of ruined takes for laughing at.
Yeah, that was rough because that whole we like basically set aside that whole day for that scene just because we knew it was an important one. So we had like 6 or 8 hours just to do that Monopoly scene, and I mean the kids in general, I just threw them under the bus because you've got Mark and Megan Mullally and Allison Brie and Eugene Cordero and these incredible comedians, and then you've got these guys, and I'm just like. All right, keep a straight face.
Yeah, don't laugh at their crazy antics.
Yeah,
but that's like finally an intense Monopoly game in a motion picture because I've never gotten through a fucking Monopoly game without somebody getting pissed at somebody.
Yeah, I mean,
it gets personal.
It gets personal. If we really wanted to be accurate, I feel like it would be Risk, just because I don't think I've ever.
Yeah, dude, Risk.
I've never exited a game of Risk being friends with those people.
Were there any things like that? Any choices in the movie that you had to go a way that you didn't want to go because of like the rights or something? Like, is it hard to?
Boston Market was on board, although it was this the greatest story. It's not really the greatest story. It's like a
yeah, that's
story.
A big buildup.
Yeah, you really set yourself up for a fall there.
Shit. At one point in the movie,
so cool.
At one point in the movie, the guy at the party when he shoots the gun right now says "you little shits," and he used to say "you little cunts." And that's just terribly offensive for no reason, and I love it. And and we went to Boston Market. For some reason, CBS went to Boston Market to be like, hey, do you want to like sponsor this movie? Do you want to do like a tie-in meal or something?
Yeah, in case they start serving rabbit.
Right, exactly. And Boston Market, I guess, initially came back and was like, yeah, you know, maybe we could do this. Like, we could do this. And then they were just like, wait, is the word cunt in your movie? Yeah, no, we can't be involved with this at all.
That's just a random question? That's the one word they're concerned about?
No, I think it occurred to them after the fact that they were like, oh, right, I think I heard someone say cunt.
Oh, okay. But you didn't say, we're changing it to shit,
no,
dick.
That's just on their bullet points of, like, general deal memos at Boston Market. Do you say the word cunt?
Nick also does, in fact, have to. There's a pretty gnarly section of the movie where he's dealing with preparing a rabbit, and was you'd never done that before, right?
No, I'd never skinned a rabbit before.
Did you feel very Jennifer Lawrence in that sequence? Because she, of course, did similar shit to a squirrel in that movie.
The
I don't want to drop any other movie names right now. We're concentrating on Kings of Summer in theaters.
You were into it, because I approached him about
okay,
it.
Okay, no, don't say into it. That's, like, way too... That's creepy. Like, that's...
He said you were, like, an Inuit.
Like, yeah, you're, like, an
I was
Inuit.
Not, said that you
like,
were,
really,
like...
really excited about the rabbit skinning scene.
So, he told me that he, like, grew up watching a bunch of, like, Bear Grylls and Man vs. Wild.
Yeah,
so he was
that's
really
true,
into
but
it.
I wasn't into it.
All right, he was open to the idea when I said to him, I want you to really do this. And his mom was not into that. I don't think to this day his mom has watched
yeah,
it.
Yeah, she hasn't seen that scene
but
once.
The best thing about it was just that we shot in Ohio, and which was like great for a lot of reasons, and also had, you know, when you shoot anywhere, it has its own unique issues. But the best thing about Ohio for the production was you could just post on Craigslist and be like, does anyone have a dead rabbit? And then people are like, I got a dead rabbit.
So, that's so weird. They're looking at Craigslist, but they raise their hand.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, well, I mean,
it's very old-fashioned. It's more like Craigslist is just a guy with a list of people with rabbits.
Yeah, pretty much.
Gabriel, can I get you a cold washcloth is the first thing I wanted to ask you, because that is the funniest thing a parent has ever offered
if you have one,
a child and his friend. That is hilarious. Was that like a Megan Mullally riff? Or
no, that's the writer, Chris Galletta, who lives in New York. That's,
my grandma has done this to me like all the time. I swear to God, I'm not actually kidding.
I've never
just,
had this
so, yeah,
can I get I you a
relate.
Cold
this
washcloth?
My grandma. Yeah, she gave me like a cold washcloth and... Like, she, like, fluffs the pillows and, like, puts the cold washcloth, like, over the pillow.
Wait,
and,
you
like,
get a cold washcloth in bed?
Yeah. That's, like, how it works. You get a cold washcloth and you lay down. That's
what you do. Just because someone tells you that's how it works doesn't mean you should go along with this. You got a lot to learn. They're teenagers, guys. They don't know. But that's Chris. That's the writer. That's like his weird. That's like Megan Mullally in. First of all, Chris the writer basically is Biagio to a T. They even look similar. But Chris,
for the record, he would never say that.
He would never say that. He would never admit that.
Yeah, that's a diss to Moises here, though.
Whoa!
No, I'm sorry. I was kidding. I was
but Chris is very on the record as saying like Megan Mullally is his mother. like the dialogue that comes out of her mouth. And we did a lot of improv and we did a lot of riffing, but that washcloth thing and the whole like Will Smith thing, those are all like based on real conversations, like of his mom just not getting it.
Yeah, I think Mark, it's just I think the camera's not even on you at that point, but I think you call Hancock Hemlick or something, or
Heimlich. Yeah,
Heimlich. That makes a little bit more sense than Hemlick, but if you yeah, and like you said, Mark plays kind of he's Megan's husband, and they're just weird parents. I mean, I guess there's a lot of things that are similar to, you know, all of our, you know, lives with our parents, but they're particularly a strange couple, I thought.
Thank you.
In a fun way, yeah.
I think that they are a really common couple. I mean, you know, it wasn't hard to tap into very recent seeming memories of my own parents asking me stupid questions like, so you decided to wear the blue shirt, not the one with the pocket. Like, that's just one of those things. That's a scripted line in the movie, and it's one of those great questions. That's one of the first things that made me fall in love with the script. It was like, that really tapped into that question that you, it instantly transported me to being 15 again to go like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, A, why do you care, and what? Like,
but that's what's so interesting about it to me is that, but he, you know, this, you develop a rash because of the parents, and but they're always very sweet and silly, and like, so it's interesting that you had that you're able to make it seem like, yeah, he'd need to get away from those people, you know, because like there's more issues with you know, Joe and his dad, right? Like those are more like well-defined in terms of like why a kid would run away from home.
Right. Well, at the end of the day, both of the kids, I think, like when you take a step back, like you should be so lucky, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Joe's problems are a little more intense, but like
they're still, they're
not really though. Like I would take my dad over Patrick's parents like any day of the week.
Disagree.
That's so hilarious.
No, man.
They're so nice, though. But they are saying a lot of fucked up shit, though, even though they're being real nice while they're doing it.
Those dinner table scenes, too, like the Hancock one, that was at like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning.
It was later than
and
that.
He couldn't keep a straight face, and I was just trying.
I was eating. That burger was cooked for like 20 seconds in the microwave. Keep in mind, our prop department was like fired immediately after that scene for feeding me that. But I was force-feeding myself raw hamburger meat to not laugh. I was like, I can't do this.
Seems like
you got mad at me. And you're busting up laughing behind camera. I hear
I'm
all
allowed
them laughing,
to.
And I'm the only one that's like trying to keep a straight face. God damn it.
Yeah, I'm allowed to laugh.
Ross, how's it going?
I'm great.
I just want to make sure you get a question in.
Holding down the left side over here.
What were there? Were there any particular you know, challenges to shooting the woods of Ohio?
Absolutely everything.
Yeah, was it difficult?
Very difficult. We had 6 day weeks, which to begin with is tough. And then on the 7th day, our director, Jordan, asked us to go out again and shoot. And we can all speak for that. So there was very little rest.
Slave driver.
Obviously very worth it. But we all in certain ways became our own zombies during this production and managed to function somehow.
Yeah.
It was, you were the nicest zombie ever, though. Like, you were always in the best mood. Like, it was... I don't know how you did it. It was actually... It no, blew my mind.
Ross is allowed to be in a good mood, so I don't have to be.
Yeah.
So.
I got to balance out Jordan. Yeah.
While watching, I next to Biagio's name, I wrote down formal dance training. Moises, what's your how do you move? How do you do that?
Juilliard School of Dance at 3.
Quite the prodigy.
You know, none of that shit's in the script either. Like, yeah.
It doesn't say, and then Biagio dances like the weirdest dance you've ever seen.
None of that's in
Ross,
the script.
Yeah, what Ross just said, the 7th day, our first day off, Jordan took us 3 guys, them 2 and the rider, into the woods. It sounds very creepy, yes, but we just started, you know, banging on the pipe.
Also sounds creepy. Yeah, that whole day was improvised. The whole pipe sequence.
Improvised
in the movie.
Pipe dance.
Yeah, we just went out there. The audio from that scene is recorded on my iPhone, That's just like guerrilla filmmaking. It just happened.
The music, or whatever you'd call it, from the pounding on the pipe was
music.
Is a repeated motif throughout the film. But that's not composed by anybody. That's just something the guys riffed.
That just happened on our first day off. And as soon as it happened, there are so few moments on a set where you actually feel like occasionally you capture something that you're like, this is good, this is exciting, that's going to work, that's going to be okay. We need to, you know, we're going to have to fix it in the edit or whatever. Very rarely do you come across a moment where you're like, oh, that's special, that's fucking magic, you know, like that's movie magic, and you're watching it. And that was one of those things when we put them on the pipe that just kind of unfolded. Like I said, it's on my audio.
For the listeners to the podcast, they're standing on a giant pipe. They didn't like put them on put them on the pipe. Sounds like you got them to smoke some crack.
We put them on the pipe.
Took them out to the woods. On the pipe and then just bang out a tune, boys. Just
put them on the pipe, took them to the woods and just banged.
For the listeners to the podcast, the three boys are smoking crack right now.
But yeah, as soon as we shot that, I just started rethinking the entire movie, and I just knew that was something special, and so we started rejiggering it. And you know, a lot, like, I didn't know there's no violin in the script. I just found out he could do it. You know, Moises is just incredibly talented as a dancer, and it's like, yeah, Biagio, why wouldn't he be able to dance?
But Patrick's foot injury, that was in the script.
That's a script.
Yeah. That wasn't one of those deals where, like, he showed up on the set with a fucked up foot, and you're like, oh, gotta rewrite some pages.
Gotta change some shit.
Gotta fix that. Was that weird walking around with that thing on?
It was miserable. To be completely honest, like, yeah, I have this guy tell me to do everything, you know, Moises and Nick are doing, it, except in a boot. And so he was like, sprint down the field. And I was like, I'm in a boot.
Yeah, I saw the slow motion running scenes. It's like, that guy really has a thing on his foot.
But he's super competitive is the best part. So he'll be like, yeah, I'm going to do this, and then bitch about it later. So he'll do it.
I never bitched about anything.
Until right now, later. I didn't say how much later.
It'll happen.
So Jordan... The title got switched at some point in the process of this movie, and I'm just curious how that happened. And
It used to be, when we premiered Sundance, it was called Toys House, which on one hand is a title that I loved. On the other hand, no one is used to the possessive form of the word toy, and people would, like, literally, like, out of Sundance, we would have reviews that would come out, and it would call it Toys House, and then by the third paragraph, they were calling our movie Toy Story. It was like, So it's this weird thing where some people love the title, some people... In fact, when Offerman got brought on board, he pitched me a bunch of weird alt titles that were like Pussy Canyon and weird things. Just like weird Offerman titles. Like
he just shows up, I'm not happy with this title.
Yeah, just like...
We're going to have to discuss some options.
The Frank Toy Story. Like, just like weird shit like that. And we always knew it was sort of a thing, but then...
Toys in the Attic.
Toys in the Attic.
Would be good. If it wasn't taken already.
Just weird
shit.
So
it wasn't like any kind of studio or any kind of pressure.
No, CBS
something.
Came in later.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I will say this freely. I found out about the title change via Deadline Hollywood. So, yeah.
I don't understand that reaction from the audience, but two or three people are disgusted with Deadline Hollywood. Yeah, so... Switch the title, and
they did market testing, and it was this weird thing where they just found that more people would be willing to go to see a movie called Kings of Summer than Toys House, and not even by that much, by like 10%. But the weird thing was on the exit polling when they were like, "All right, now that you've seen the movie, do you feel like Toys House is a better title than Kings of Summer?" It was even. They were like, "Yeah, we feel like they're both fine titles."
It is kind of a spoiler that there's going to be a house.
I don't think
and
so.
And as it is, I was disappointed they never became royalty. But but I did like the fact that no one at any point in the film, you know, because of that sequence of events, no one had the opportunity to have the line yelling out, like, we're the kings of summer, right, and then jump into the lake or something.
Yeah. Come on back to Toys House. Pussy Canyon.
Yeah. No, it's Pussy Canyon. So, yeah, that's all. That was the interesting story to me. Or, I mean, I thought it might be an interesting story, and turns out it was.
Our writer to this day still calls it Toys House.
But there's that moment, I was going to say, there was that moment where Moises, as Biagio, is standing in the shopping cart with his arms out as if he's about to say, I'm the king of the world. So it is sort of in there, okay. I think. Everyone's nodding in agreement for the.
I thought he was going to say Pussy Canyon. That's what it looks like he's going to say.
That's what I say every time I'm in a shopping cart. Oh, yeah, this is Pussy Canyon.
Offerman's notes in general were amazing because they were all these things. It was like, he'd be like, you know, a snake wouldn't behave that way. I'm like, you know, it's totally unrealistic that the boyfriend would be wearing a tool belt and driving the truck at the same time. No one does that. It's like, all right, dude, you're a man. I'm not. I'm a boy. I get it. I don't know about these things, like survival things. They were all incredible weird notes.
Yeah, he's an intimidating figure.
Yeah.
Where the hell is he tonight?
He's with his lovely
wife. What's his excuse?
Oh,
the two of them blowing you off in your hour of need.
Yeah, that's what they do.
But I'm thrilled to have all you guys here, and I would like to ask a question before opening it up to any audience questions that are out there that I ask on every episode of my podcast. Nick and Moises have already been through this, but let's start with Ross on the end down there, crack cinematographer. What have you seen lately? Have you been to the movies lately?
I have been to the movies lately.
What'd you see? Man of Steel? This is the End?
The most recent movie I saw was This is the End.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that? I don't mean to put you on the spot. Let me just ask you, how was the cinematography in This is the End?
I appreciated it. I think it actually, for a comedy, I think we're in a world that comedies aren't giving emphasis to the way they're shot, and I think that they, you know, they at least looked at that and took that seriously.
I think yours and that your movie and that movie are probably the two most hilarious movies that also have lens flares that are playing
lens
in theaters
flares.
This summer.
I appreciate lens flares.
Yeah.
Okay, you could have said good looking or textured or anything, but just lens.
Well, I don't know if I'd say that. I mean, I'm not sure if I'd say that about the other movie, but yeah, of course, the cinematography in this movie is beautiful.
You were all about the flares. So
I love lens flares. Said,
like, every time there'd be a sunset, oh, flare! And we'd like, stop shooting and get the flare.
Well, we,
or, like, through
we,
the trees.
We did the math. There's actually, if you break it down, there's a flare once per minute in this movie. So
that can't possibly be true.
It's not actually once per minute, but sometimes they happen. There's 92 flares in the movie. We counted. There's 92 lens flares.
I was
going
to say, that's the only reason I'd go back to see This is the End, to do a flare count.
I would have guessed 50 at most if asked that. I thought I saw it 3 or 4 times, and that's why I was being so clever bringing it up.
92.
But 92 times.
Yep.
That's a fun drinking game.
You'd be dead.
Next time I see that movie. Mark, what have you been to lately?
I think the most recent movie I've seen was To the Wonder.
Yeah.
Terrence Malick movie.
Yeah, did you like that?
I did.
It was gorgeous, yeah. It was very spare and lovely.
Do you enjoy all of Malick's work?
You know, I will admit that I didn't know much about it until meeting Jordan. And when he found out that I hadn't known that much about Terrence Malick, he put our friendship on hold until I studied up. So, yeah, becoming a giant fan.
Tree of Life?
Yes.
Moises is saying yes to Tree of Life.
Incredibly trippy. Just.
And what have you seen lately, Moises? Have you been to the...
Yeah, I saw Man of Steel.
Did you like it?
Yeah. I wish I could say it was really, really good, but it was okay. It was okay.
All right. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard mixed things, so it's a fair assessment.
Yeah. I don't want to trash on it, but it was decent.
This kid is slick. Nick, what about you?
This is the End, too, actually.
They already made that? Oh, my God.
There's already
out with
the
second
one. They just
greenlight shit so fast these days.
Yeah, I know. I got a pre-screening. It's really cool. Like, just going to blow your mind.
It ends twice.
This is the End, too. It's crazy. It flares, like, at least 130 times.
Damn. Hold up.
But no, it was good. I laughed. That was what I came to do, was to laugh, and I did. So
I'm here to laugh, everybody. Make that announcement to the theater. Well, also, the thing about Kings of Summer that, like, you may not get... The trailer's pretty funny, but it's consistently funny throughout. Like, it's very... It's do you call it a comedy, or do you... You can't call it a rom-com, obviously.
It's not really a rom-com.
Even though those boys do fall in love with Biagio.
Yeah, I think you have to call it a comedy. And you probably have to, like, then even go another level down and be like, it's a coming-of-age comedy. But, like, I don't think that represents what it is. Because I do, like, at the beginning, when I prefaced the intro, I was like, it's sort of a really weird movie, and it's not. And I think that there's stuff in this movie that is very...
That's
like,
that was an interesting thing to put into our heads. It's weird, but it's not. Enjoy. Because it is. It's quirky, but it's also relatable at the same time.
There's also just, like, absurd stuff. And, like, I just wanted to make something that was, like, a throwback to, like, Amblin movies and John Hughes movies, and then basically make, like, a really dumb Terrence Malick movie. Which is to say, like, have impressionistic ethereal elements and match dick jokes.
Yeah, it's artsier than your typical John Hughes movie.
But then, like, I think there's really weird alt comedy in that. Like, all the stuff with Thomas Middleditch and Marilyn Rice Cubb as the cops. Just, like, fucking, there's crazy. And Biagio,
I think,
like,
Thomas Middleditch studied T.J. Miller before playing that part.
Well,
I think he was channeling him or something. Yeah, and Marilyn Rice Cubb's very, very funny. And Kumail Nanjiani has a funny scene where he shows up,
like,
as
Hannibal
a delivery
Burris
guy.
Shows up.
Hannibal Buress. I love when he's like, what's that, a pager? Who's got a pager?
No. That dude had a Biagio. Beeper.
That's yeah,
my
beeper.
Favorite line. Yeah, that dude had a beeper.
Dude had a beeper. And that was...
Is that a beeper? Yeah.
That had to be you, right? Biagio had a beeper.
Yeah, Biagio had a beeper.
Of course he did. And but that was I hope everyone listening to this as a podcast is watches the movie first, like, go see it somewhere and then listen to this. This is a weird time to tell people that, but I hope that's what happens, because of what I'm about to say. When Biagio asks his dad those questions,
right,
I like to imagine that Biagio just returned home and the father never noticed he was gone.
In my mind, the dad had no idea he was
gone. Yeah, and he was just shaving, and just asked me some questions like he does sometimes. it's been a while.
But also, that scene was written in English, and Moises is Colombian, and he made great strides in telling me he was from Colombia about 30 times. And so one day I just put him to the test and was like, all right, dude, do the first half of the scene. Do this whole scene in Spanish except the last line. And it's so weird, because that character should be Italian and he's speaking Spanish. And then the last line, but the dad's responding in English. It's like the weirdest thing.
It is pretty weird now that you mention it.
Yeah, but the dad had no idea he was gone at all.
All right. I can live with that assessment. Who do I leave off at? Gabriel, have you been to the movies?
Yeah, I saw Man of Steel. It was decent.
Whoa.
Wow.
Like,
this is smart. You're getting people to check out your movie. Like, you know, just talk down every other movie.
I'm not saying, like,
RCG is way better. Like the snake CG? Yeah. Kills it.
You had a real snake running around in that.
We had a real snake running around.
One that actually could hurt somebody?
No, it didn't have fangs and it wasn't venomous.
It was a gopher snake.
It's a gopher snake, apparently. It was a real pain in the ass. Never did anything I wanted it to do. Yeah.
Bit the wrong actor. So
they wouldn't even
rewrite the scene.
We didn't feed that snake for like 2 weeks, which is like a normal thing in snake training. It makes them aggressive. And then he showed up on set and, like, what do they call it when they kill the mouse? Thumping it?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what Jungle Terry
called. Oh, yeah. So our animal trainer's name was Jungle Terry. And he drove around in a
zebra-printed Range Rover.
Yeah.
And dressed in various safari regalia.
And just yelled at people, welcome to Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Welcome to Jungle Terry. Yeah. It's fucking weird. Yeah, that snake sucked.
All right. I think we've run out of time, actually, but let's get
some audience questions.
Yeah, let's get a couple quick ones, because no one's given me the stop now.
Also, I didn't get to answer the movie I saw.
Okay, we've been told we have 3 minutes, so speed round of audience questions. This gentleman right up front
real
here.
Real fast.
Just yell it out real loud.
I was just wondering, I thought the first half...
Okay, we don't have time for your critical assessment of the motion picture.
How did you balance the tone from being hilarious to being really serious?
How'd you balance the serious and...
If you watch my short film Successful Alcoholics, it does something similar where it starts off really funny and then gets really dramatic and then ping-pongs back and forth. I'm going to speed through these questions. It's just testing. You know, it's always about making it real and grounded and about something and ideally rooting it in these characters. And then it takes a lot of testing and revising in the editing process to make sure the audience is willing to go on that path.
Thanks for that question. You're free to go. You, sir.
After a bunch of testings, was there anything that you were surprised the audience reacted to that you didn't think they would react that way?
There's still things when I watch this movie. Do we need to repeat the question?
Did you watch the whole thing this time? The
no.
screening?
I've seen this movie like 500 times. It's stupid. I hate this movie.
Yeah, you do have to see it a lot, but laughs in different places.
Yeah, well, there's always things that people laugh at that I'm like, why are you laughing? That's not even a joke. What's going on? The things that I am not only surprised people laugh at, but really happy people laugh at are a lot of the like loose improv things that I really let these guys do and really would bring themselves to it. Like the before the camouflage scene, when Patrick exits the house and is swinging that stick around and hits himself in the foot, that's really him hitting himself in the foot.
That was no joke.
You know, and so there's a bunch of weird stuff like that. That you know, like filmmaking's a fluid process. So you never know what people are going to react to. Don, you can go.
And, let's ask some of the actors. Have actor questions? Dude, right there. Okay, go. Yes, sir.
Okay. Moises. Podcast listeners, I was hoping maybe you could just bust a quick move for us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's saying that for the podcast you should dance because that's. Oh. I always like to have things that the listeners just go, "What's
so
happening?"
I just backflipped, guys.
Yeah.
I'm so
like
slick.
Use your imagination.
I got a tweet from somebody after you were on Doug Loves Movies, Moises, and the person said, "You know, he was on Hannah Montana. Why didn't you ask him about that?" And I said, "Because I bet you he doesn't give a shit about talking about Hannah Montana. He's probably had enough questions about that."
Well, I mean, you just asked it, so let's get into it.
you know, cancel the 10-10 screening. We're going to talk about Hannah Montana for an hour.
I was 10. I'm 19. Kings of Summer.
Exactly.
I had no idea he was on that show until we were in Ohio at grocery stores and like teenage girls would come up to us crying, being like, "Are you Rico from Hannah?" And I was like, "I don't give a shit about that show. I know nothing about that show." But to an entire generation, he's like their Steve Urkel. He was the comic relief on a show
Steve
that was...
Steve Urkel to me.
But he's clearly escaped from those shackles and does a great job of, you know, like we're not seeing... What's his name? Jaleel?
Jaleel White.
Yeah, we're not really seeing a lot of him in movies like this, so good job.
Last question.
Well done. One more maybe like a question that everyone could quickly
everyone
give
shout
an
it
answer.
Out at the same time.
Land Trunt.
Yeah!
Land Trunt.
That's
was
a
that
great one. No, that's that was in the script. That is from the mind of Chris Coletta. That's not a question, so.
Well.
It's an influence, certainly. The New Yorker referenced that and thought we were okay.
Do you have a few other influences you could mention?
I mean, it's sort of what I was talking about earlier. Look, the influences to me at the end of the day are just, goddamn, being 14 is the best, / thank God I'm done with that. That was the most painful, terrible, awkward time of my life. But it's what makes you who you are. That's the influence.
Have you guys ever seen Speed, the Keanu Reeves movie?
That's how I refer to it every time I bring it up.
Bad Boys 2, Over the Edge, Kids,
This is the
Goonies, Stand By Me.
It was like
John
Kids
Hughes.
Without the AIDS, I thought.
No, the AIDS is there. You just missed an important
plot. It's Biagio. We cut it.
Well, thank you so much to all you guys for doing this. I really appreciate it. Jordan Van Roberts, Nick Robinson, Gabriel... Is it Basso?
Basso.
Yeah. I didn't want to say it the wrong way. Moises Arias, Mark Evan Jackson, and...
Ross Rigi.
Yeah. Go see Kings of Summer.
Yeah, thank you for coming out.
Do it.
People listening, it really does make a difference.
As always... No, I'm, you know, podcast listeners. And as always, anyone who doesn't go see Kings of Summer is a shithead.
Is a shithead.
Now it's time for Doug to watch another talkie. Eyes of Gold, his viewing prowess makes him cocky. There's no room in his